Apúrate que se acaban las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's. Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. Y como la Navidad ya se siente, ahorra $4 en luces LED de 100 bombillas en hilera GE. Ahora solo $5.98. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta 12/3, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
Hi, I'm Journey. Today I'm going to tell you my story. But before I continue, please like, share, and subscribe to hear more stories like this. My stepmother Cecily came into my life when I was 12 years old, 2 years after my mom died from complications during surgery. Dad met her at a pharmaceutical conference where she worked as a sales representative. She seemed nice enough at first, always bringing me gifts and complimenting my artwork. But looking back, I realize she was performing for my dad, showing him what a great stepmother she'd be. Everything changed after they got married. Cecily's true personality emerged within months. She was controlling, manipulative, and obsessed with her own family, taking priority over everything else. Her sister, Ondine, was her closest confidant, and they talked on the phone for hours every single day. Ondine lived 3 states away, but visited constantly, and whenever she came, I was expected to give up my bedroom and sleep on the couch. "Ondine needs a comfortable bed," Cecily would say. "She has back problems. You're young, you can sleep anywhere." My dad, who I'll call Tate, went along with whatever Cecily wanted. He was a radiologist who worked long hours, and I think he was just relieved to have someone managing the household after years of being a single father. He didn't see how Cecily treated me when he wasn't around, or maybe he didn't want to see it. By the time I was 16, I'd learned to keep my head down and count the days until college.
Extra value meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Cecily had essentially erased my mother from the house, packing away photos and replacing mom's furniture with her own things. When I protested, she told Dad I was being ungrateful and refusing to accept her as part of the family. I left for college at 18 and barely came home after that. I built my own life, made my own family with friends who actually cared about me. I got a degree in graphic design, started my own freelance business, and met my fiancé Breslin when I was 24. He was a software engineer with a kind heart and a big family who welcomed me immediately. Breslin proposed on my 26th birthday, and we started planning a wedding for the following spring. We wanted something intimate, just 75 guests at a vineyard about an hour from where we lived. The venue was gorgeous but small, which meant our guest list had to be carefully curated. I invited Dad and Cecily out of obligation. Despite our strained relationship, he was still my father, and part of me hoped he'd actually show up for me on my wedding day. I didn't invite Ondine. I'd met her maybe 8 times in 14 years. We had no relationship, and frankly, I didn't want her there. She'd always treated me with the same dismissive attitude her sister did. The invitation went out in January. By February, my phone was ringing constantly. Cecily was furious. "Where's Ondine's invitation?" she demanded when I finally answered her 5th call. "I didn't send her one. The venue has limited capacity, and I'm only inviting people I'm actually close to." "Ondine is family. She's been your aunt for 14 years. "She's your sister, Cecily. She's not my aunt, and we barely know each other." "This is unacceptable, Journey. You're deliberately excluding her to hurt me." "I'm not trying to hurt anyone. I'm planning my wedding with the people who matter to me. Ondine doesn't make that list." Cecily hung up on me. For a week, I thought that was the end of it. Then Dad called. "Journey, sweetheart, can't you just make room for Ondine? It would mean so much to Cecily." "Dad, we're at capacity. Adding one person means removing someone else. Would you like me to uninvite one of Breslin's cousins who I actually have a relationship with? I just think this is causing unnecessary tension. Cecily's very upset." "Cecily's always upset about something. This is my wedding. I get to decide who comes." Dad sighed heavily. "I understand, but I have to live with her. Can you please just consider it?" "No, Dad. The answer is no. If Cecily has a problem with that, she doesn't have to come either." I regretted those words as soon as I said them, but I was tired of being manipulated. Tired of my father choosing his wife's feelings over his daughter's autonomy. Tired of being treated like my life events were just extensions of Cecily's social calendar. A few weeks later, I had to go to Dad's house to pick up some boxes of my old belongings that I wanted for the wedding. Breslin and I were creating a memory table with photos from both our families, and I had pictures of my mom stored in Dad's attic. Cecily had never let me display them, but she'd at least allowed them to be stored away. I drove to their house on a Saturday afternoon, planning to grab the boxes and leave quickly. Dad was at the hospital doing weekend rounds, so it was just Cecily at home. I should have waited until Dad could be there, but I didn't think I'd even see her. I planned to grab my stuff from the garage entrance and go. But Cecily was in the driveway when I pulled up, loading groceries from her SUV into the house. She stopped when she saw me, her expression hardening immediately. "What are you doing here?" "Getting some boxes from the attic. Dad said I could pick them up today." "Of course he did. Always giving you whatever you want while I'm expected to accept your disrespect." I got out of my car slowly. "Cecily, I'm just here for my belongings. I don't want to fight." "You don't want to fight? You've been fighting me since the day I married your father. Everything I've tried to do for you, every effort I've made, and this is how you repay me, by excluding my sister from your wedding. This isn't about you. It's about my wedding and who I want there. It's absolutely about me. You're trying to humiliate me in front of my family. Ondine is heartbroken that she wasn't invited. She helped raise you." "She didn't raise me at all. She barely acknowledged my existence unless you were around." Cecily's face flushed red. "You ungrateful little witch. After everything I sacrificed for you, I gave up my freedom to help your father raise someone else's child, and this is the thanks I get? Nobody asked you to sacrifice anything. You chose to marry Dad. I was just part of the package you had to tolerate." "Tolerate? I've done more than tolerate. I've provided for you, clothed you, fed you. You did the bare minimum required by law. You're not a martyr, Cecily. You're just a woman who resented having a stepdaughter and made sure I knew it every single day." We were both yelling now, standing in the driveway screaming at each other like we'd wanted to for years. Neighbors were probably watching, but I didn't care anymore. 14 years of resentment was pouring out. "I should have left your father when I had the chance," Cecily hissed. "But I stayed because I felt sorry for him, stuck with a sullen teenager who never appreciated anything." "Then leave. Nobody's forcing you to stay. Dad would probably be happier anyway without you controlling every aspect of his life." Cecily advanced toward me, and I instinctively stepped back. "You selfish brat! After everything I've done for you!" "Cecily, I already explained. My wedding has limited seating and I barely know your sister. Ondine is my family. If she's not invited, then neither am I." "That's fine. It's my wedding, not yours." Cecily turned abruptly and got into her SUV. I thought she was leaving, trying to get away from the argument. I moved toward the garage to get my boxes before things escalated further. But then I heard the engine rev loudly. The SUV was moving, fast, directly toward me. I had maybe 2 seconds to process what was happening before the front bumper slammed into my legs. The impact threw me backward onto the concrete driveway. Pain exploded through my body as I hit the ground hard, my head bouncing off the pavement. "Vroom. Let's see how you plan your wedding from a hospital bed." Cecily's voice was distant, muffled by the ringing in my ears. I couldn't move, couldn't breathe. Everything was white-hot agony radiating from my legs up through my entire body. I heard the SUV door open, heard footsteps. Cecily's face appeared above me, and for a moment I thought she was going to help, but her expression was cold, satisfied even. "Maybe next time, you'll think twice before disrespecting me." Then she was gone. The SUV pulled out of the driveway, and I was alone on the concrete, unable to move. Blood pooling beneath my head from where I'd struck the pavement. I don't know how long I lay there. It felt like hours, but was probably only 10 minutes. A neighbor, Mrs. Kelton from across the street, found me. I heard her screaming for her husband to call 911, felt her gentle hands checking my pulse, heard her telling me help was coming. The ambulance arrived. Paramedics carefully stabilized my neck and loaded me onto a stretcher. Someone called Breslin. I remember hearing his voice on a phone, frantic and terrified, as the EMTs worked on me. At the hospital, the damage assessment was devastating. Both legs were fractured, my right femur and left tibia. I had a severe concussion, 3 cracked ribs, road rash across my back and arms from being thrown onto the concrete. The doctors said I was lucky to be alive. If Cecily had hit me at a different angle or speed, I could have been killed. Dad arrived at the hospital first, his face ashen. "Journey, what happened? They said you were hit by a car." "It was Cecily," I managed through the pain medication fog. "She hit me with her SUV, on purpose." Dad's expression went blank with shock. "That's impossible. Cecily would never..." "She did, Dad. We were arguing about the wedding invitation, and she got in her car and drove straight at me. Mrs. Kelton saw it happen." Breslin arrived then, and I clung to him while he held me and cried. His parents came too, surrounding me with the kind of family support I'd never gotten from my own father. Dad stood apart, looking lost and confused, like he couldn't process what I was telling him. The police came to take my statement. I told them everything, the argument, the deliberate acceleration, Cecily's words after she hit me. Mrs. Kelton corroborated my story. She'd watched the entire thing from her front window and had already given her statement to the officers who'd responded to the scene. "She aimed for your daughter," Mrs. Kelton told Dad in the hospital hallway, her voice carrying into my room. I saw it clearly. She reversed slightly to get a better angle, then accelerated directly at Journey. "It was intentional assault with a deadly weapon, Tate. Your wife tried to kill your daughter." They arrested Cecily that evening. She'd gone to Ondine's house in the next town over, apparently believing she could just wait for things to blow over. The police found her there, and she initially claimed the whole thing was an accident. She said I'd stepped in front of her car unexpectedly, and she couldn't stop in time. But the evidence destroyed her defense. Mrs. Kelton's testimony, the surveillance camera from another neighbor's house that had caught the incident on video, the distance of my body from where I'd been standing, which proved the force of impact, and most damning, a text message Cecily had sent to Ondine while sitting in her sister's driveway. "I showed that ungrateful brat what happens when you disrespect family. She won't be walking down any aisle anytime soon." The prosecutor charged her with attempted murder, assault with a deadly weapon, and leaving the scene of an injury accident. The evidence was overwhelming. Even the defense attorney Dad hired for her couldn't build a credible case. The trial was brutal. I had to testify from a wheelchair, my legs still in casts, about the years of emotional abuse and the argument that led to Cecily attacking me. Breslin held my hand throughout the entire testimony. Dad sat in the gallery, torn between his wife and his daughter, looking 10 years older than he had a month before. Cecily showed no remorse. She testified that I'd been a difficult stepdaughter who made her life miserable, that I'd deliberately tried to humiliate her by excluding Ondine, that she'd just wanted to scare me a little to teach me a lesson about family loyalty. She actually said those words in court, that she'd wanted to teach me a lesson. The jury deliberated for 3 hours. Guilty on all counts. The judge was harsh during sentencing. "You used a vehicle as a weapon against an unarmed woman because she didn't invite someone to her wedding. You fractured both her legs, gave her a traumatic brain injury, and left her bleeding on concrete without calling for help. Your actions were not those of a scared or threatened person, but of someone seeking revenge for a perceived slight. This court sentences you to 12 years in prison." Cecily finally showed emotion then, crying and pleading for mercy. The judge denied her request for bail pending appeal. She was taken directly to the county jail to await transfer to state prison. The aftermath was complicated. Dad filed for divorce immediately, finally seeing Cecily for who she really was. But he was broken by guilt, by the realization that he'd brought this woman into our lives and enabled her treatment of me for 14 years. "I should have protected you," he told me one day in my hospital room. "I should have seen what she was doing. I was so focused on not being alone after your mother died that I ignored everything else. I failed you as a father." I wanted to argue, but he was right. He had failed me. For years. And while part of me wanted to forgive him, to rebuild our relationship, another part couldn't forget all the times he'd chosen Cecily's feelings over my well-being. "I need time," I told him. I can't just forgive 14 years because you finally woke up. Dad accepted that. He paid for all my medical expenses, including the physical therapy I needed to relearn how to walk properly. He checked on me regularly but didn't push for more than I could give. It was the first time he'd respected my boundaries in over a decade. My recovery took 8 months. The wedding had to be postponed a year while I healed and did physical therapy. Breslin never complained, never made me feel guilty. He was there for every doctor's appointment, every painful therapy session, every moment of frustration when my legs wouldn't cooperate. We finally got married a year and a half after I was supposed to walk down the aisle. It was beautiful. The same vineyard, many of the same guests, and absolutely no drama. Dad attended alone. Ondine, of course, was nowhere to be seen. Neither was Cecily, who was serving her sentence in a women's correctional facility 3 hours away. I walk with a slight limp now. One of my legs healed slightly shorter than the other, so my gait is permanently affected. I have chronic pain that flares up when weather changes. I had to give up running, which I'd loved. But I'm alive. I'm married to someone who loves me unconditionally. And I'm free of Cecily's toxicity forever. Cecily tried to reach out from prison several times. Letters full of self-pity about how her life was ruined, how she'd just made one mistake in a moment of anger, how I should forgive her because we were family. I never responded. Breslin's mother asked if I wanted to send the letters back, but I told her to just throw them away. Cecily's words meant nothing to me anymore. Ondine blamed me publicly, telling anyone who'd listen that I'd provoked Cecily and that the whole situation was my fault for being a disrespectful stepdaughter. It destroyed her relationship with other family members who couldn't believe she was defending attempted murder over a wedding invitation. She became isolated, bitter, and alone. Dad and I slowly rebuilt our relationship. It took years of therapy, both individual and together, but we eventually found a new dynamic. He met Breslin's parents and saw what functional family relationships looked like. He retired early from medicine and volunteers now at a support center for children of divorced parents, trying to make amends for his own failures by helping other kids navigate difficult family situations. "I can't undo the past," he told me on my 30th birthday, "but I can spend the rest of my life trying to be the father you deserved all along. It's not perfect. Some wounds don't fully heal, but it's better than it was, and that's something." Cecily was denied parole after serving 5 years. She'll be eligible again in 2 more years, but the parole board noted her continued lack of genuine remorse. She still maintains she was justified in her actions, that I needed to be taught respect. That attitude ensures she'll likely serve her full sentence. I don't think about her much anymore. She's a chapter of my life that's closed. Sometimes I see that SUV in my nightmares, feel the impact, hear her voice saying I'd plan my wedding from a hospital bed. But those moments are becoming rarer. Therapy helps. Having a family who actually loves me helps more. Breslin and I have a daughter now, a bright-eyed 2-year-old named Cadence. She'll never meet Cecily. She'll never know the woman who tried to kill her mother over a wedding invitation. She'll grow up knowing that family isn't just about blood. It's about the people who show up for you, who protect you, who love you without conditions or demands. If a family member physically attacked you over something as simple as a party invitation, would you ever speak to them again, even if they apologized? Or would you consider the relationship permanently destroyed beyond any hope of repair?